You are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I'm Rebecca Zerman. It's back to school time in Arkansas, and as we start a new school year, there's a lot to talk about. From funding to curriculum, there are big education policies that impact kids in our state. Today, we'll be talking about new policy efforts in the early childhood education field, the national education policy ESSA that has replaced No Child Left Behind, Arkansas's policies for funding K through 12 education, and other major education policies. But before we get started with our discussion of back to school, we will start with a quick review of the 2018 Kids Count data book that Arkansas Advocates co-released with the Annie Casey Foundation from Jenny Blankenship, Education Policy Director at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. Jenny, what were the major findings in the Kids Count data book this year?
Hi, Rebecca. First of all, if you're not familiar with the Kids Count data book, this is something that the Annie E. Casey Foundation puts out every year. It's a snapshot of data on all kinds of things that affect kids, education, health, family economic security, and percentage of kids in poverty. So it's good to look at how Arkansas compares to other states. And what it found this year is that only 51% of our 3- and 4-year-olds in Arkansas are currently enrolled in some kind of pre-K program. And that's remained pretty flat since 10 years ago. What it tells us is how many are enrolled. It doesn't get to how many are actually able to access high-quality programs. So it's a good snapshot of where we stand, but we still have a lot more research to do on quality pre-K. Another thing I wanted to mention is 69% of our fourth graders were not reading on grade level, according to the latest data. This is very concerning in Arkansas because really third grade is kind of thought of as the point in which kids go from learning to read to reading to learn. And this is something that Arkansas Advocates has spent a lot of effort on the past several years with the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading to bring awareness of the importance of reading and how many of our kids are really behind. And it makes it much harder for them to catch up as they move into other grades. So we're hopeful that some of the new state laws and regulations are going to help make a difference. Requiring teachers to teach the science of reading is one of those policies. That's basically teaching kids to decode words and letter sounds using phonics. Which has kind of gone by the wayside in a lot of schools over the past few decades. So if you want to know more about data on education and other areas like health in Arkansas, you can go to our website at aradvocates.org. And there is something called the Kids Count Data Center. And you can access data by the state level, county level, sometimes the congressional district level, and make all kinds of charts and graphs and maps. It's really cool if you're a data geek like me, but it's really useful information. So I encourage you to check it out.
And now I want to introduce our other guest for our back-to-school discussion. Richard Abernathy is the Executive Director of Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators, and Shelley Anderson is the President of Arkansas Parent Teacher Association. Thank you both for joining us, and Richard's joining us by phone. Richard, do you want to introduce yourself and describe the work of the Association of Educational Administrators?
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Yes, I'm Richard Abernathy, and I'm the Executive Director of AAPA. And we are an umbrella association that houses all kinds of different administrators. So we have assistant principals, superintendents, school business officials, et cetera. So basically, if you're an administrator in a school in the state of Arkansas, you can be part of this association. We do a lot of training, particularly around school finance. We do some policy work. We work with the Department of Ed and legislators as well, trying to improve education for the children in the state of Arkansas.
And Shelley, do you want to introduce yourself and the work that the State Arkansas Parent Teacher Association is doing?
Certainly. So like you said, I'm Shelley Anderson. I'm the president of Arkansas PTA. And PTA's mission is to be a relevant and responsive resource for children and families. We advocate a lot like you all do for our students and our families to make sure that they have all of their needs met. We advocate for the total child, so not just education, but also health and well-being, safety, anything that affects our kids today. And PTA is at different levels. You probably have a local PTA at your school. If you don't, we can certainly start one. You may have a council level that is regional or even by county. And then, of course, there's the state level and even the national level. And the reason that we have a state and national level is so that we can watch over the things that happen both in Little Rock and in Washington, D.C. that affect our students. Also, another thing to know is that we are 100% volunteer organization.
Okay, great. Well, when we're talking about back to school, let's start with our littlest learners. Jenny, do you want to start by giving an update of what's happening in the early childhood field and what to expect over the next school year? And anyone else who wants to jump in can jump in too.
Sure. Just to give you a little bit of background, there's a huge body of research that's been done over the past few decades that has shown that children who receive high-quality early childhood education are much more prepared for success in K-12 schools and beyond, even into college and the workforce. So Arkansas used to be known as a national leader in our pre-K program. It's been around for almost 20 years. Over 10 years ago, it got a very substantial infusion of money from the legislature to build up the Arkansas Better Chance program for 3 and 4 year olds in pre-K. Unfortunately, for the past 10 years, it's been flat funded, which means that there's been no cost of living increase, no wage increases, essentially, for most of our educators in pre-K, and quality is really starting to suffer in a lot of places. They're not able to maintain their facilities or provide the kind of professional development opportunities that their educators need and deserve in order to start to provide a really good education for their kids. So one of the things that Arkansas Advocates is really trying to push this year is rebuilding our Invest Early Coalition, which with a bunch of other partners, nonprofit organizations, education associations, PTAs, parents, businesses, all these people who are coming together because they recognize the importance of early childhood education and know that we really have a lot of work to do to bring things back up to where they should be and then move us forward into the future. So if you're interested in joining our coalition, you can, again, go to our website at aradvocates.org. If you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see a little picture that says the Invest Early Coalition, and then you can sign up for our coalition. You'll receive newsletters, different updates that we'll have about our events, publications, our legislative strategy over the next couple of months. It seems like the legislative session is really far away. It starts in January of 2019, but it will be here before we know it. So we've got a lot of work to do to get people excited about advocating for our littlest learners. And contact us anytime if you would like us to come speak to your organization, your church, your Rotary Club, and we would love to help get more people involved in the advocacy work that we're doing.
And I'd just like to add that Arkansas Parent Teacher Association is not just for K-12. We've actually started with the early childhood centers. And so a PTA is something that could be formed even in the pre-K level in order for parents to better advocate for what their students need.
Oh, great.
And Richard, is there anything major from an administrative perspective that you're seeing in the early childhood field?
Yes, we absolutely agree with Jenny. You know, pre-K is absolutely essential in many areas of our state. Those kids, especially in poverty, those families in poverty, those kids don't have the same experiences as other kids, and so they start behind. If you start behind, then traditionally, according to research, you stay behind unless there are interventions that can actually catch you up. So pre-K in Arkansas, we think, is very, very important. It's something that we absolutely support. We encourage, and like Jenny said, the funding has been flat, except for just a little nominal money here recently. And so we also push in that area to try to secure additional funding for pre-K. It goes along with not just pre-K, but actually high-quality pre-K programs to give those kids an opportunity to be successful when they enter school. So we're very supportive.
Absolutely. And quality is key to all of this. If you want to really have significant impacts over the long term. But access is also an issue, especially for families with infants and toddlers. We essentially have a crisis in Arkansas with families not able to find quality care for their kids as soon as they're born. There are wait lists in many places. It's really tough to find a place in a rural, isolated area where you feel comfortable sending your kids and knowing that they're going to be safe and stimulated and cared for and loved, because it's just really hard to recruit highly trained educators to a lot of places of the state. And there's just not enough state or federal funding to help build up access and create new programs and improve the programs that we have. One thing that we are excited about is that Congress at the federal level has approved a major increase in federal funding for what's called the Child Care Development Block Grant. And Arkansas will be getting an extra $26 million in the next fiscal year, which Governor Hutchinson has said that he would like to dedicate to getting people off the wait list for vouchers. And that a voucher is just kind of a gift certificate, for lack of a better word, to help people afford quality child care. So that's the good news. The bad news is, at the same time, our state is just now ending a four-year $60 million grant known as the Professional, I'm forgetting what it's called, PDG, Professional Development Grant. That's another federal grant that it has gone away, and we're not sure how the slots for pre-K or early childhood that were funded as part of that $60 million, we're not sure what's going to happen to those. So we may be using one new federal increase to plug holes in what we're losing now and essentially not getting us any further ahead. All of that remains to be seen. So we've got a lot of work to do at the state and the federal level.
And I'll move on to Richard. I have a big question to ask you. What is ESSA? Can you give an overview of what that program is, or that policy is, and how that is enacted in Arkansas?
Well, ESSA, of course, is a new acronym for the federal legislation. It's a state accountability system that allowed states to go back and revamp their accountability programs, and which Arkansas did. And really, they did a good job of giving states a little more flexibility in what they wanted to count towards their goal, as long as it was measurable and also consistent from, you know, one school to another school. So Commissioner Key and his staff, and of course, he had input from practitioners and parents. He conducted meetings, public meetings, all over the state of Arkansas when they're developing this particular plan. And so we are under a new plan. It does allow some flexibility in what schools are going to be scored on Arkansas goes a little farther, and we actually assign grade level scores to schools. But it allows things to count, such as graduation rates, not only your test scores, but something that we're really encouraged by is the growth in students. Because quite honestly, in the old system, if I had a middle class and above student body, I came out scoring really well. But those schools that had a lot of poverty and a lot of obstacles they had to overcome typically didn't. And now they are able to get measured on growth. You know, are they actually growing those kids? Are they moving them down the continuum of going from one grade to the other? And so it adds a little balance in those test scores. So, you know, we're just now in the ESSA program, but we think it is much improved over what we were previously under.
I agree, and I think Richard really summarized it very well. When you look into the technicalities of how the ESSA plan works and how these school letter grades are assigned, it's very complicated. And one of the things that we're working on this fall is a guide for parents about what ESSA means for their kid and for their local schools, and really tries to very briefly break down how these letter grades are calculated. If your school has a C, well, what does that mean? Is it a good school? Is it a bad school? Is it a fair measure of what the teachers and administrators are doing for your students? We're going to try to break that down and help parents understand what they can do to get more informed, get more involved in the process. If there are some things that are going on at your child's school that you don't understand or you want to change, there's a lot of things that you can do to advocate to your administrators, to your local school boards, getting your local parent teacher association involved. And I will turn that over to our expert right now, because I know that they're really the state PTA is really interested in ESSA as well.
In fact, we were given a grant from National PTA and the Gates Foundation last year while we, our state, was working on our ESSA plan to go around and educate parents, get their input, and deliver it back. Our immediate past president actually sat on the steering committee as the ESSA plan was being written. What I can tell you that we've learned is that parents are not experts on education policy, but they are experts on their kids. They know what their kids need, and they want better for them. They're just not sure how to get it. So a lot like what you said, they can learn to advocate via their school board, their administrators, help with reaching out to us, to you guys. But the ESSA law, Every Student Succeeds Act, clearly states that parents are to be meaningfully consulted. And that's not necessarily something that we've had in the past. So when we came to the table as just parents, not representing any particular group or organization, just the Parent Teacher Association, we were there just being parents. We asked for a few things, and we were very surprised that they were granted to us. We asked for better representation. We thought that parents needed to be at the table, and parents' voices really count. So the sole purpose to advocate for parents and families and these communities were reflective of those who were most impacted by the change in education. So if these parents and their students are the ones most impacted, again, we really felt like they deserved representation at the table, and that was granted. We also asked for better transparencies. States, school districts, and schools must provide clear timelines and identify the specific opportunities for parents and families to be involved. You can say that you are allowed to be involved, but that if they don't know how, when, where, or why, they're probably not going to do that. So we asked for better communication in where they could come to learn more or how they could reach out to not only their particular school districts, but to organizations like we all participate in order to give them just the clear facts and be transparent about that. We also asked for more equity. The needs of the families, the parents, and the students are not all the same. A lot of times we forget that they have different times that they're available. They have different locations that they're able to come to. They have disabilities or even language barriers. So we ask that the law address that and make opportunities for engagements to be equal across the board. So various dates, various times, various locations, translations, and materials for disabilities. And all of that was provided. And we also asked for more information. I mean, at the most basic level, parents want to know how new laws affect their child and their education in their schools and what they can do about it. So materials should be no more than, say, 3 pages. And that's exactly what we were granted, no more than 3 pages, and that they should provide clear and concise information in language that we as parents can understand. And so we're very, very happy to finally have that place at the table to use just the parental voice.
So it sounds like a big takeaway from your conversations with parents was this idea that, you know, parents felt, you know, I don't quite understand this policy, but I want to understand this policy, and I want to understand how to be an advocate for my child.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, if you were to go to the Arkansas Department of Education and print out the ESSA law, it is very long. When I went to print it, I didn't see how many pages. Couple hundred, I think I remember. And so we said to our legislators, how are our parents going to understand this? And that's when we decided to sort of, I hate to use the term dumb it down, but for me, that's what they had to do. They had to sort of dumb it down and make it more simplistic so that we understood exactly how this law was going to affect our child at our school in our community.
And what is the answer to that from the Parent Teacher Association's perspective? How do you think it will impact the children and the students of the schools?
Well, I've seen a lot of different things that are going to change. And I've noticed that was the next thing that you wanted to talk about. In the old law, No Child Left Behind, there were some kind of one size fits all issues that we didn't quite like, especially for our kids who may be a little bit need some different attention or different instruction, that sort of thing, especially with the ELL learners. That's our English language learners. They need a little bit more. And then, of course, any children with disabilities, they need a little bit more. So we got away from that sort of one size fits all, and we kind of really went into the intricate details of how the children could be helped and it would affect them in a positive manner. And also, the No Child Left Behind was very prescriptive. It was, you know, this is the way that it has to be, almost like Richard mentioned earlier. There wasn't a lot of flexibility, especially for the states. And the parent teacher organization definitely advocates for state and local control over things like this, because every community is going to be a little bit different from their neighbor. And especially if you're looking at a community, say Little Rock compared to Imboden, Arkansas, or a smaller town like that, it's mm-hmm. a very, very different, diverse way of looking at life. So we needed that local control, and things didn't need to be as prescriptive. And then also with the No Child Left Behind, we were so focused on test scores that we had schools being dubbed the school that teaches the test. And we don't want the teachers to feel like they just have to teach a test. We want the teachers to be able to be creative so that the children can learn in the ways that that best suit them. And so through this, we've actually discovered that there's lots of different ways to engage the children and let the students almost lead the class in a way, because we're seeing how they can learn, and the teachers are kind of, in my opinion, from what I've learned from them, really liking this idea a lot better of allowing the children to kind of show them what works best for them.
And Richard, how would you respond to that? Do you think that this new ESSA law is going to kind of significantly change how teachers teach in the classroom?
I don't know if I would go that far. I do think it is a better, more valid, more reliable way to look at what kind of job schools are doing. I really think if you want to change what schools are doing, you do engage the parents. You engage the community. You know, they're the ones that are really going to build a school system or a school building the way they want to see fit, and I can't do that without being engaged. So I think that's what's going to change. I do think with this transparency, that not only do we measure test scores, but also measure growth and measure other things, that gives parents a little better idea of how schools are doing. So they might be able to better engage in those conversations as far as what we need to look at as far as improving. So I'm more convinced that will be what drives the improvement. And along with those same lines, Rebecca, I don't know if y'all have had much time to take a look at what on the Department of Ed's page under My School Info. It is a very transparent way to compare schools, to compare elementary schools, middle schools, school districts. You can compare those schools by student test scores, by student population, by poverty. You can even go down, you know, comparing salary schedules. And I would encourage parents and community members that if you've not taken a look at that link on My School Info, that they spend a little time there, and it really gives them power to just see how their school's doing compared to other schools similar. You know, Shelley mentioned comparing Little Rock with Imboden. That might be a difficult comparison, but who would Little Rock compare with? And you can pull that data up on My School Info.
I agree. I use that site all the time. And the Arkansas Department of Education really deserves a lot of credit for building this resource. I think we have one of the best data systems and now some of the best transparency in the country, which really speaks well to the work that they've been doing. And I do feel like the department tried to get as much input as they could on the ESSA plan throughout a more than a year-long process across the state. They had a lot of outreach events. They put everything on their website, tried to make things available through webcasting. It's never going to be a perfect process. Not everyone's going to agree on everything, but I feel like we're moving in the right direction. However, I will also say that we can't expect a transformational change until we start recruiting and retaining and paying our teachers what they deserve. We've got a huge problem in Arkansas with the number of people who want to go into teaching. 50% drop in the past 5 years and the number of college students who are going into teaching careers. This is not boding well for the next several years in Arkansas for our education system. I think there's also a real lack of funding for professional development now for teachers to be able to do all these things and meet these ambitious goals that we have in ESSA and in our state's strategic plan for education over the next decade. So we will have to make sure that the funding is there in our adequacy process this year.
Yeah, Jenny, I agree. The recruitment and retention of teachers is alarming. You know, we are only going to be as good as what we can put in front of those kids in front of the classroom and those leaders that we can put in those buildings. And if we're not getting the quality candidates in those positions and even attracted to the career, we are in significant trouble. It doesn't matter what kind of policy you throw at it, how much money, it doesn't matter if we can't get the appropriate people in front of those kids. And that it should be a top priority in the state of Arkansas is what we're going to do to turn that around.
Agreed. And it's not just salaries, you know, benefits, retirement, all of these things matter. But honestly, No Child Left Behind has turned a lot of people away from the teaching profession who taught for decades, and their morale was so crushed, and they felt like they were treated so unfairly by the unrealistic expectations and penalties and punishment of the law that they just threw their hands up and said, I can't do this anymore. It's not good for my students. So I'm hopeful that the intent and the approach of the new ESSA law will help build teachers back up again and hopefully, you know, make the teaching profession have the kind of respect and professionalism that it really deserves. And we've got to do a better job of taking care of our teachers if we want to take care of our kids.
I totally agree.
I agree, and you know, I do think No Child Left Behind and the amount of accountability that was placed on teachers without the proper support and proper training to get them there has been very, very difficult, and that caused many to shy away from the field. You know, one of the things that, and I go back to grading schools because that's, you know, to the simple, everything is simple. And you think about that, well, yeah, this school's an A, this school's a B. Well, no, there's things within that grade that actually needs to be looked at. And ESSA does a better job of that. But anytime you try to simplify something down to a single category, like we did with No Child Left Behind, sometimes you get false results. For example, when you grade students, you don't grade students on one single grade. They have multiple grades. They may be doing very well in mathematics, but not so good in literacy, or maybe doing well in another subject, but not so good here. The accountability system needs to be flexible enough that it gives parents and community members and teachers to know exactly where are we doing good and where do we need to focus on improving. And boiling it down to one simple grade sometimes is misleading to parents. And so I would like to see that expanded to multiple grades. That is an Arkansas decision. That's not a federal decision. So our policymakers could do that. I don't think that's where they're going right now. But I would like to see schools being held accountable to multiple grades versus just a singular grade.
Yes. I would like to see the letter grades go away altogether, to be honest. Multiple grades would be an improvement, but right now I feel like it's just not giving us the kind of information that's helpful.
Well, on that note, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We are talking about back to school and education policies that we should all be thinking about as this new school year starts. Another important thing that we wanted to talk today about was school funding. And there's a process in Arkansas called adequacy to decide how to fund schools. And Jenny, can you give an overview of adequacy and what that is and how this adequacy began?
Okay. Adequacy in a nutshell. It's a very big thing to wrap your mind around because it affects almost every aspect of your school quality. And what kind of resources your teachers and students have. Everything from transportation to preschool programs, poverty funding, teacher salaries, everything that's funded in K-12 public schools in Arkansas is part of what's called foundation funding or categorical funding. And without getting too deep in the weeds, this came out of the state Supreme Court's decision known as Lakeview around 2001. And what the Supreme Court found was that Arkansas' system of funding its public schools was inadequate and it was inequitable, meaning that low-income kids in low-income areas of the state were not receiving the same kind of funding and opportunities as more prosperous areas of the state due to their low property wealth and other things. So every year the state has to study on an ongoing basis all things related to adequacy and funding. So the Bureau of Legislative Research puts this huge report together. The joint committees of the House and Senate Education Committee decide which parts they want to recommend to the full legislature and what their budget recommendation will be during the next legislative session. So I'm sure all of that is clear as mud now. This is where it's really important to get people engaged in contacting their legislators, especially if they serve on either the House Education Committee or the Senate Education Committee. And things are really ramping up right now because the adequacy report for this biennium, that's a two-year period, it's due to the governor's office, I believe on November 1st is when it's usually due. So they're going to be making their final recommendations very soon. And a lot of people have no idea that this process even exists, how it works. But at the simplest level, just contact your legislators to let them know that our schools are under-resourced, our teachers are grossly underpaid, and our kids need a lot of things these days that they're not getting, whether it's enough school nurses, school counselors, all the things that go into making a really good school.
And is this something that parents are talking about, Shelley, at least at the PTA level?
At the local level, I think it's a lot like what she just said, that the parents don't necessarily understand. We do try to watch at the state level just to see what's going on. At the national level, we actually have a program that's called 5 cents Make Sense. Simply said, 2 cents of every dollar at the federal legislature goes to two cents of every tax dollar, excuse me, goes to education. National PTA has started this initiative for the 5 cents Make Sense in order to try to raise funding across the board. But it's very difficult for Arkansas parents, because in doing research, we read things like Arkansas does provide more funding than most of our neighboring states, and that we are nearly the same as the national average. But there are a lot of things like inflation that aren't necessarily put into the language of that. And so it's a very difficult thing to talk about, because we don't have that one pager that says this is what it is, this is what it means. Honestly, when you say the word adequacy to most parents, they really don't connect it with funding. Mm-hmm. You know, they connect it with whatever Webster says it is, which is the minimum amount to be sufficient. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're only giving the minimum amount to be sufficient, maybe 5 cents does make sense.
Richard, do you feel like it's the minimum amount to be sufficient?
Do I feel like we are having the minimum amount?
Yeah, do you think that it is an adequate amount for administrators?
Let me just talk about adequacy in general, and then like Jenny explained, that is a legislative process that they determine basically what the needs of schools are, and then they fund that. And it's not supposed to be contingent on how much revenue is available, it's how much money the school needs. And truly, that's not really the way it works, but it's okay. No, I don't think the schools are adequately resourced. I think that we need, and what we've been asking for is, let's go back and conduct an authentic adequacy study. We have to go back and look at what fundamentally started the adequacy, and then has anything changed? For instance, you know, that started back in 2005, 2006, and what did we expect kids to know then? What problems were kids facing then, were parents facing then, were schools facing then compared to now? And where do we want our kids to be 10 years from now? And we have to go back and revisit that. Just a real quick example, there are requirements now that we know schools are facing and the parents are facing that was not an issue, or at least on the books back then, such as dyslexia. You know, we now have a whole system for dyslexic kids, which is a really good thing, but that wasn't a part of adequacy. School safety. We didn't talk about school safety back in 2005-06, and now that is a big component that schools are having to fund some, but it's also taking resources away from academic side of it. Right. We need to talk about that. So it needs to be revisited, you know, and there's maybe cost savings, such as virtual learning. You know, we didn't have virtual learning classes back then. We had distance learning, but it wasn't the same. So the whole process just needs to be revisited. And I think there's some legislators that believe in that. There's a real fear about that because it may determine that it costs significantly more now than what the state's putting in it.
Yeah, and it's not just adequacy or having enough funding that's concerning. It's the equity issue as well. Because when we look at where we are now compared to when all of this process started and the Lakeview decision was decided, our achievement gaps between different racial groups and economic groups are not closing. I mean, in some cases, maybe they've narrowed a little bit, but we have huge disparities in academic outcomes, in large part because we have huge disparities in teacher quality, teacher retention, facilities, classroom materials, especially in places like the Delta that are really suffering. They don't have enough property wealth to generate the kind of local tax revenue to pay for a lot of things that are needed in a modern education system now. So really taking a closer look at, are we being equitable for some of our most disadvantaged students, making sure that race equity is a part of every conversation that we have, and not forgetting that we have to do right by these students because it's important to our state as a whole.
And Richard, I'm curious, what are the practical implications for superintendents and principals not having adequate funds? What kind of decisions are they having to make every year about how to run their schools and their districts?
You know, there are decisions that obviously they have to weigh in on as far as providing services for kids and operating. You know, one of the typical school district, their budget, 75 to 80% of it, maybe even a little higher than 80% of it, is spent on salaries. Now, that's teachers, administrators, bus drivers, but just staff salaries. And sometimes schools get upside down because they hire more staff than what they need. And so they constantly have to monitor that staff to make sure you have the staff in place to meet standards and meet kids' needs, but you don't have too much. So that decision is constantly out there. The other things, obviously, you have to operate school. You have to pay the light bill. You have to maintain it. You know, certain percentage has to go to maintaining those schools. So once you get all that taken care of, there's a small sliver of dollars out there that says, okay, now what can we do for kids? How can we expand our opportunities for kids or intervention programs for kids to really help their individual needs and go back to personalized learning? So there is a process, Rebecca, when you go through that about where your priorities are, how you fund that. But when schools have basically been flat funded the last 4 years with a 1% or less funding the last 4 years, they're really just trying to maintain. The minimum salary schedule was increased this past year, or past 2 years, and those schools that had to increase those minimum salary schedules were not given enough money to do so. So they had to make decisions. Do they cut something? Do they not replace a position? You know, are there efficiencies in their operation that they can take a look at? But they had to cover those costs with the small increase in state dollars, but also their local funds. So it is coming to a point, especially if you're a small school, that if you're losing enrollment, you're really struggling. Our funding formula is not designed for schools losing enrollment. So they're, you know, working with their staff and with their school boards and communities, they're having to make those kind of decisions. Unfortunately, sometimes student achievement gets pushed to the wayside just trying to survive.
And so what do y'all think it will take to get legislators to look again at adequacy and what the actual number is? What is an actual adequate amount to help support our schools?
Another lawsuit? I don't know. I think everyone cares about education in theory, but when you're prioritizing these massive tax cuts year after year and yet another round of tax cuts for the wealthiest Arkansans, it becomes something that in their minds should be prioritized in the budget above education, even though that's specifically what the state Supreme Court said you could not do. You are supposed to adequately fund schools, like Richard says, according to their needs, not according to how much money we have.
I hope it's not a lawsuit. I mean, it may be. Of course, who knows how long a lawsuit would take to play out and what would be the implications of a lawsuit. I don't know.
Yep.
I'm still convinced. Policymakers and the population in general really care about kids and they want a quality education. I think it may get to a state like, you know, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, that the community starts from a grassroots effort and goes out and tells lawmakers that basically this is enough. You know, we want our kids and we want our schools funded appropriately. And they listen to that. You know, they listen to those public rallies that are out there. There is definitely a plan to cut taxes. That is a top priority. And right now there's not a definite plan to resource schools. But you know, we had a speaker at our summer conference, Buddy Berry, and one of the things that he mentions that we need to build a profile of a graduate in the state of Arkansas. You know, what does a graduate in the state of Arkansas, what do they look like? What skills do they need? And then let's build a future to make sure those kids have that, have those abilities and those skills when they graduate. Then come back and say, what resources we need to provide to ensure that that happens. And so we're not there yet. We need to start to build a profile for what we expect a graduate to do, but then we need to be ready to fund that when that profile is developed.
I totally agree with that. And in fact, I just want to touch on something that Richard said. He mentioned grassroots advocacy and the protests and how legislators pay attention to that. Well, Arkansas PTA or any PTA, that's what we are. We're grassroots advocates. So if you want to be a part of a movement that specifically advocates for the health and well-being and education of children in schools, then PTA may be a place that that you would be a great fit, and that's why we have members, so that we can all stand up and say we are 24,000 strong to our legislators, and that, you know, we all want adequate funding, or we all want better safety issues, or whatever it is that that parents are calling for at that time.
And with the last 10 minutes that we have left, what other issues is everyone working on over the next year? And what other concerns or bright spots do you see for the next school year? Richard, do you want to start?
You know, one of the things that schools and communities are working on right now, especially, is it's school safety. You know, how are we going to try to protect our children? You know, and it seems to be that the argument across the nation is, you know, arm teachers, don't arm teachers. You know, it's more of a gun deal. You know, our position since 2003 has been that those local communities need to get together, and they need to have advocates with their parents, with law enforcement, and they need to come up with a plan on how they're going to best protect those kids. And if that means arming staff, that means arming staff. If it doesn't mean arming staff, that's fine too. But allow them the flexibility to do that. And from a state perspective, you know, we are advocating for resources to try to help implement some of those plans. So that is one of the focus areas that we have. Obviously, you can throw in others. The one that really concerns me is mental health. You know, again, that was not an issue when Lakeview was first talked about in Matrix was developed back in 2006. But that is a big problem in schools and seems to be getting worse. Our families and our kids and our schools, we need help working with kids and families with mental health issues. Recruiting and attracting teachers, obviously, that will remain on our radar for many years to come, I'm afraid. And like Jean said, salary is not the only answer to that. It may be part of it, but just the sheer professionalism is a bigger part of that solution. So those are some of the areas that we're focused on.
Shelley?
Well, I feel like Richard was actually reading for my list because we have a lot in common. Obviously,
y'all two need to meet.
We do need to meet. Obviously, safety is a top priority for us right now, too, with everything that's been going on. We have been asked to testify for the Governor's School Safety Commission, and as parents, that just means so much to us. We went to D.C. and testified about gun safety issues. But let me just say something on the side. It's really good to get parent input, but we also need to talk to the kids. Maybe not the little ones, maybe the high school kids. Yep. But sometimes we forget to ask them their side. So that's something where safety issue is concerned, that we really want to listen to them. Also, the mental health, he talked a lot about that. We believe that that is a huge issue in our schools right now. Our kids are suffering every single day. We have joined the Child Health Advisory Committee in order to better have a voice at that table. Another thing that we're working on is a Hispanic and Latino initiative. We have had a very large upswing in the number of, again, the English language learners, especially in the Hispanic community. So we want to reach out to those families and let them know that they can advocate for their students. Funding, we talked a lot about that. Teacher salary, education, health and well-being, all the things that need funded. But most important, just to remember to tell the parents to unite with their schools, that we are the ones that stand behind our teachers and our administrators who are teaching our students, and to ask them what they need to better help teach our kids. So to educate our parents to stand united with their schools and to use their voice to say what their particular child needs, or also what they can do to help.
Echo everything about the mental health issue. Back to adequacy again. Right now, we're only funding one school counselor for every 450 students, I believe. Richard, correct me if I'm wrong. But
you're right.
It's something crazy like that. If you think about what an average school counselor is in charge of doing every day, the number one thing that they end up doing is administering standardized tests, which was not the original intent of their role. So there's very little time for them to deal with mental health issues and trauma for kids when you have a caseload of several hundred. And there's certainly very little time at the high school level to do academic advising, college advising, financial aid help to help more kids get to and through college. So I'm glad everyone is on the same page about that. So hopefully we can get something done during the next session. Another priority, Richard, go.
I just on the counselor issue, because we agree. I mean, they've turned into, in some areas, you know, testing coordinators. We would like to see that removed as well. The question comes, who takes that responsibility? Is it an assistant principal or someone who's, you know, dealing a lot with discipline and safety issues? Again, it goes back to lack of resources. But, yes, we agree that we need counselors.
Exactly. Another big priority for Arkansas Advocates and a lot of our partners is after-school and summer programs. We have been working hard for over 10 years, along with the Arkansas Out of School Network, to try to get some funding for quality after school and summer programs. We know that 3 months of learning loss for kids puts them very far behind when they start the next school year. And good after school programs work. If you care about community safety and keeping kids safe, you should care about after school and summer programs. If you care about college readiness and preparing more people for the workforce, you should care about after school and summer programs. Keeping parents on the job. What are they supposed to do with their kids after 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 3 months of nothing in the summer if they can't afford quality programs? It's kind of the same thing as the early childhood education program. So what we'll be asking for again is an appropriation from the state legislature for the Positive Youth Development Act. It was passed in 2011, so the whole system is already set up, but it has yet to be funded. So we're asking for a $5 million investment to go into communities, not just schools. It can be nonprofit organizations like a local Boys and Girls Club that already has experience and expertise in running good programs. So this would make a huge difference in a number of communities, especially when federal funding, what little we have for federally funded after-school programs, is really in jeopardy right now. Another thing that we're working on is school discipline reform. We had some success during the last session in banning out-of-school suspensions and expulsions for kids in kindergarten through fifth grade, unless they pose some kind of danger to themselves or others. So the kids can't just be moved out of the classroom for minor infractions anymore. And we're hoping to expand that to the middle school and high school level at some point, because we're finding that kicking kids out of class is too often the norm instead of trying to get to the root cause of some of their behavior problems and what they or their families need. There's a lot of good practices that schools can use, things like restorative justice, conscious discipline. We don't have time to get into the details, but a lot of these things are available on our website. Again, I will plug it at aradvocates.org. So we're hoping to have some other good policies passed on school discipline. And again, it all boils down to how well teachers and administrators are trained in implementing these programs. So we've got to make sure that they have the resources for professional development and support to make sure that they know what to do if they can't just warehouse a kid and out of school suspension anymore. There are better ways.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Richard Abernathy with the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators, Shelley Anderson, president of the Arkansas Parent Teacher Association, and our very own Jenny Blankenship with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. Thank you all so much. We'll see you in a month.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABF 88.3 in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
The following program is made possible in part by Organic Valley Family of Farms, organic and family-owned since 1988. Learn more at organicvalley.coop. By Park Foundation, dedicated to heightening public awareness of critical issues. And by support from listeners like you, helping air Bioneers radio programs worldwide free of charge. Visit bioneers.org.
Welcome to the Bioneers, revolution from the heart of nature.
There are many of us who are creating the models, who are preserving the sacred knowledge. Our farms are the repositories of this very important knowledge that has really been disappearing, so that when the time comes and an awakening happens, there will be places in every single community around the world where folks